currently at work, and I am literally working as I am recording this. I just wanted to give a big thank you to all the listeners of this podcast. It's just been overwhelming how much positive feedback I've gotten from everyone. I'm amazed that people are listening, and it's just kind of organically growing. So I just want to say thank you. If you want to be really awesome, I suggest you go to iTunes and rate and review the podcast. You know, if you're going to give it some stars, I'd say give it 5 stars. That is definitely the amount of stars that I would like to see. You guys are just amazing. Also wanted to do another plug for my guests on this episode, Blaine Smith and Troy Stark. Their web series, The Shit Hawks, Season 2 is not out yet. They've assured me it's coming soon, but I'm going to say go check them out on YouTube, The Shit Hawks, and watch Season 1 because it's hilarious. You can also check out their stand-up show the first Tuesday of every month in Toronto at the Emmett Ray. They have amazing pros come by. It's just a great show. It's free, too. Check it out, man. The Emmett Ray in Toronto. Troy Stark, Blaine Smith. You guys should definitely check that out. As well, if you want to follow the podcast on Twitter, we are at Back to Degrassi, exactly like it sounds. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at Tim FM McDonald. It's an MC in there, no mistake. And what else? Oh, yeah, if you want to see me perform stand-up, then I think the best chance for some people would be in Waterloo on October 8th. I am doing the Crooked Sword comedy show at Churchill Arms. That's in Waterloo. It's an amazing show. There's always about 50 people there. It's a free show. So many great comics are coming from Toronto and around Ontario just to do this show. So if you're in that area on Wednesday, October 8th, I would definitely suggest checking out that free show. So I think that's it. And again, I'll just say, hey, guys, you're the best for downloading and checking out this podcast. Gonna keep it going. I got like another 80-some-odd episodes to do, so another year and a half. Let's keep going back to Degrassi. All right, let's start the episode. Thank you. Wake up in the morning feeling shy and lonely. Gee, I gotta go to school. I don't think I can make it. This is Back to Degrassi, episode 4. This is the podcast where we watch an episode of the classic Degrassi Junior High and just bring up its greatness, its cheesiness. This is a sweet episode because it's the first one where shit truly gets real, gets very serious. It's such a juxtaposition with how cheesy the show also is. I have two guests with me today. They're both stand-up comedians. They have a web series called The Shit Hawks. They just finished their run of the play High Times here in Toronto.
High Life.
I fucked it up already.
It's still about drugs, yeah. So it communicates the idea.
We got Blaine Smith and Troy Stark here, guys.
Yo.
This is awesome to have you on. Let me ask you, Troy, did you go to an actual junior high?
I went to 3 junior highs.
3 junior highs? Yeah. Was it comparable here to your experience?
I didn't realize that there's parts of Canada that don't have junior high. So like Degrassi Junior High was just normal to me. Like that's just what school is, at that age. But then I come to Ontario and everyone's like, no, high school starts in grade 8, man. What the fuck are you talking about?
No, that's wrong too. Now, that's the weird thing about, so Degrassi's filmed in Toronto. There's like a Degrassi street in Toronto.
Yeah.
I grew up in Toronto and I didn't go to junior high. There was elementary school, which was 3 to 5.
Yeah.
There was middle school, which was 5 to 8.
Wait, elementary school was what years?
Well, 1 to 5. Sorry, I should have said 1 to 5.
Yeah.
I was just in the gifted program from grades 3 to 5, guys. So I went to a different elementary school in those years.
La di da.
Yeah. But yeah, so elementary school up to 5, and then middle school from 5 to 8, which is a very literal way to phrase that. And then high school was grade 9. So this was confusing for me.
But middle school is the same as junior high, right?
Middle school would be junior high, but yeah, it was the same way actually. I think no, the public school in my town in Hamilton had just a 7-8. But I went to a Catholic, and it was 1 to 8.
Oh, okay.
So I went to, in Prince Edward Island, it's elementary is 1 to 6, and then junior high is 7, 8, 9, and then high school is 10, 11, 12.
Oh, wow.
So, like, grade 7, 8, 9 is junior high, And yeah, it's pretty much probably the worst years that you could ever be in school. Like, it sucks that they isolate those kids with each other.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the gulf between being in grade 5 and being in grade 9 is so insane.
Yeah.
Like,
it's such a big difference. Like, you're not quite yet a real person, and then when all of a sudden when you're like 15, you actually, I feel like, have become a person at that time.
Yeah. Yeah, but like, man, thinking about having to like be a grade 5 with a bunch of grade 9s around, that would have been scary, man.
That would have, actually. It would have been really intimidating, I think, to have to see them every day.
Well, there was one school in PEI that was, they have that a lot. Like, they'll have K through 12 schools. But, like, PEI, there's one school that was grade, like, 1 through 9. So, like, the grade 1 kids would still be in the same school as the grade 9 kids. And that would, I don't know how that was, but
that'd be so weird if you're like going out to like smoke a joint or something, and you're like, "Oh, there's the grade ones over there on recess."
There's children that are dumb because they're so children.
They could die on any given day. Yeah, like very, it's possible. Did you, Blaine? Did you watch Degrassi Junior High when it was on, like in its original run, or when you were younger?
Yeah, when I was younger. I don't know if it would have been the original run.
I get that was like original run was 87 to 92, so probably the reruns.
Yeah,
I think
the
that
reruns
was on.
Then, because 86 is when I was born. So, but yeah, it was. I mean, it's, you know, especially growing up in Toronto, where it's like, you're like, you know, when they go to the strip club, they go to Jilly's. You know what I mean? Like, it's so like you can see when stuff's happening, you're like, oh yeah, that's, and you know, that time period, seeing Toronto on a screen was rare. Nowadays, every movie shot in Toronto, but yeah, that was always really funny. Just being like, I know where that is. Like, I'm pretty sure I knew where his like apartment was.
Where Rick's apartment was.
Yeah, like I've passed that apartment.
Funny. That'd be weird growing up in the city and being like, oh yeah, there's Queen and whatever.
Yeah,
like a lot of East End stuff.
Yeah.
What about for you, Troy? Did you watch Degrassi?
Oh yeah, I used to watch. I would come home every day. Okay, grade 2, I would come home every day at lunch, eat my lunch, watch Degrassi, and then Batman the Animated Series, and then be 15 minutes late going back to school from lunch. But I would do it every day, Degrassi, and it would like just repeat.
Mm-hmm.
So like once they finished Degrassi Junior High and whatever was out of Degrassi High, it would just start over again.
Oh, right back to the beginning. Yeah.
So you were always just like, if I missed a day, then like the story would have progressed and I'd be like, oh fuck, I'm going to have to wait like 6 months before I can find out what happened in that other episode.
It is. It's like 85 episodes, but like they could do that because they played them every day. Like they could do that like 3-4 times a year. you could know the series so well within a year.
Because it was on, for me, it was on every day at noon. So 5 days a week at noon, you know, that's, how many weeks is that? 21?
Oh.
How many weeks is what?
85 episodes.
That's
by
hard.
Five.
5 divided by 12. Well, that's 15? Let's go with 16.
Okay. We're all great at math. We've worked this out.
It's pretty close. That's how I do math. Just get as close as I can.
Well, 16 times 5 is 80.
Oh, I was super close. So it's 17 then.
Right. Boomtown.
I don't remember what that means. Oh, four
plus
times a year then.
And long weekends.
3 times a year then. You could watch it all. We did it, guys. We just did math together.
Yeah.
That was
okay,
amazing.
Let's edit this
another,
part out.
Another a school fact that I don't know if you know before you asked me to be on this. One of the high schools I went to, I was in this thing called the International Baccalaureate Program. And the school I went to had that program, and then they had a bunch of other programs. And one of the other programs they had was called Interact, which was for kids that weren't planning on doing anything with school for a living. So it was like athletes and actors.
Oh.
So I went to school with like a good chunk of the cast of Degrassi, The Next Generation.
Oh, wow.
Yes, Drake as well.
Ah, of course. That would have been the follow-up question.
Which would have been the follow-up question.
Yeah. Dirty old Drizzy.
Yeah.
That's a claim to fame. How many times have you dropped that story to a girl here or there?
Well, I hate Drake.
Oh,
so
I just wish there was a hashtag you only tell that story once, you know what I mean?
Let other people bring it up, I guess.
Yeah.
You had see this first episode too, the cover up here. It's a super serious episode and you had a good way to describe it, Blaine.
Yeah, I mean Degrassi is always sort of like taking hallucinogenic drugs. Sometimes you're gonna sit down and you're just gonna have a good time, and then sometimes you just turn that episode on, and you're like, oh fuck, this is gonna be rough. God damn it. Someone's getting AIDS this episode, you know?
Or, I mean, hopefully losing the use of their legs is always a good episode of Degrassi.
Yeah.
It's seriously, they can go either way. You don't know if they're just, like, getting ready for the photo shoot or someone's getting AIDS. They can go... Yeah. Or someone's pregnant.
No, but it's a complex show. Usually someone's getting ready for the photo shoot and someone else is getting AIDS and is pregnant.
In the best case scenario, it's not the same person for all three stories.
Yeah,
that'd be
too much. That's a season finale.
Oh, that's true. So let's get right into this one. So every episode of Degrassi starts with like a cold open. This one opens on Rick's house. He's just sitting there eating breakfast and you can hear his dad upstairs just yelling like, "Where's my tie?" Just like...
Yeah,
pretty intense.
He's munching on off-brand Cheerios.
Yeah, I mean, that's how they indicate his father beats him, is if you look, except for the Coca-Colas in the fridge, every single thing is no-name brand. Everything.
Yeah, obviously.
That stark yellow box.
Poor people beat each other. That's what this episode is about.
So they're going with the stereotype.
Yep,
and
leaning into it.
When his dad comes downstairs, he's reading a magazine, which he is very against. He does not like that at all.
A motorcycle magazine? What the fuck did you just bring into my house? You're too young to be looking at motorcycles.
There's literally posters of motorcycles all over his place.
Yeah. His bedroom, just the living room. I don't know where his dad thinks he's getting those pictures of motorcycles that are on the wall, but it's from magazines.
And the reason he got it, like, he first is accused of stealing it, and he's like, "No, I bought it." He's like, "How?" He's like, "I took back the bottles.
I cleaned up the house that you're too drunk and abusive to clean up." "Oh, you think so, do you?" Wham, wham, wham.
But his dad was just saving up those bottles until they were enough bottles to get more bottles full of things.
Yeah, apparently.
Well, he doesn't, obviously, what's the kid's name?
Rick.
Yeah, he does not understand the economy.
No, but that's the thing. His dad is like, "Do you think money grows on trees?" And then he takes the magazine and throws it out. That's
magazine's 100% grow on trees. That's a fact.
Yep.
Doesn't seem like he's teaching him the lesson of money to be like, "You bought this? No, we throw things out you buy that I don't like." That's how money works.
That's right.
Well, that's why you don't buy things that can be destroyed.
And then Rick, kind of under his breath, like, calls his dad a punk, and he hears it, and it gets super intense because, like, he just... runs at him and just starts wailing on him.
But they gloss over the violence pretty quick there.
In the first one, yeah. They...
For both of them, they do. Like, it's in the first one, it's like shaky cam and you can't really see what's happening and it just has him cowering. And then in the other one, it's just like fucking.
Well, let's not jump ahead. We'll talk about.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll get to that one.
There's more glossy violence.
The first one was, it was like POV from the dad's eyes. Like, he was coming at him about to punch him and Rick just like cowering. And then.
They just want you to know what it feels like to beat a child with that shot.
Yeah, that was a powerful, powerful shot.
I also should mention that the dad has like a pretty sick 80s mullet. Like,
he does so.
Yeah, it's there's something going on with that hair. I do like that we don't specify what his job is. We just assume he's bad at it though.
Yeah, I find that weird that he wears a tie.
Yeah,
like, he's
right?
Too white collar, I guess.
Yeah, he's a little white collar.
But like, here's the thing is that like,
but I mean, his tie is in the kitchen.
Yeah. That's fair. He's white collar during the day, and then he's obviously he doesn't like that about himself, so he comes home and takes it out on his kid. And also, if there's no Coca-Cola in the fridge,
ooh, yeah, watch out. Oh, one other thing that bears mentioning is that his dad says, "Who'd you get this from, Frank?" And you're just kind of like, "Who's Frank?" So that's kind of left open ended.
Who's Frank? Frank is okay. No.
Oh
spoilers.
No, we can spoil this one actually. I guess Frank is his older brother.
Right?
I just find it interesting how they like. They don't tell you that right away. They let it peel away as it goes on.
It's an immaculately written episode, man. They lay it all out there. Frank, he's coming.
He's coming strong. It's surprising how hard the writers did try to, like they were writing. Like, you watch Saved by the Bell, not as much effort going into it.
That's true. Some might say some episodes of this were overwritten, but...
I think that's fair. So then the theme song kicks in. Do you guys have any... what are your thoughts on the theme song?
Oh, instantly, I was like, "Where's my bologna sandwich?" This song is supposed to be accompanied by a bologna sandwich.
Yeah. Definitely snacks. Snack song. It's a song you eat snacks to. You go, you're like, okay, there's enough time in this song. I know how long this song is. I can make something in this time.
Yeah.
It's a way, too, I think that it starts always, like, right out of the cold open, the way that the drum beat kicks in and then it cuts to it. It always just kind of gets me a little amped for the episode, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, it helps you get the snack, right? You're running around the kitchen, you're like, shit.
Yeah, I got 21 seconds. I gotta fucking make this happen.
So the episode starts outside the school. Rick is rolling up on his sweet bike.
We got a lot of vehicles to talk about. So his bike is bonkers.
His bike is the sickest bike on earth, possibly.
That was the closest you can get to having a chopper as a child.
But that's
a child
like,
in junior high.
But that's like grade the eight. Pre like chopper bike. And
oh yeah, that's
like,
that means
the banana seat and everything. It's the best bike on earth.
And then it is immediately trumped by the best bike on earth, which is the BMX with yellow mag wheels.
Ooh.
Which, if you don't know what mag wheels are, they're the ones that are plastic in the shape of like a star. That rolls up, and you're like, "This is a."
I'm still more impressed by the chopper.
No, mag wheels.
Absolutely.
Mag wheels for sure.
Did you see who had the yellow one?
I think it was a black kid.
Oh, Tim. Okay.
Tim. I think it was Tim. I think you had it.
I had it. Yeah. I always like when Tim's in episodes because he never has a main story, but he has my name and like occasionally he'll be like that. He's friends with Joey in this episode.
Yeah, you know, he just, everyone needs a sounding board.
Oh, when Joey rolls up on his skateboard.
And he can actually ride. I mean, not amazing.
I mean,
he's tic-tacking,
tricks,
yeah.
But he's competently.
He's 13 tic-tacking. Years old, and he's rolling up on a skateboard.
He does
actually
it,
doing it.
It's some of the least offensive. Some of the least offensive skateboarding I've seen on television or in movies.
Yeah.
Very real skateboarding. But he did yell out, Joey F. Jeremiah, king of the skateboarders. Maybe a little far going with that.
Well, but, you know, Degrassi maybe doesn't have a lot of skateboarders.
It didn't look like
true.
It did.
It was 87.
Yeah.
So there wasn't.
So, you know, that was sort of in, you know, it was big in America. It hadn't really, it wasn't taken off as much in Canada. Yeah, mm-hmm. We get things a little delayed at the time, you know, so.
And then Joey just wipes out, though, kind of like taking away from his king of the skateboarding.
Well, I mean, the thing that then supplants him again as king of skateboarding is he wipes out. And just rolls with it.
That's true.
Which is the true mark.
He also, that's where he starts to lie to everyone all the time.
Like a filthy bastard.
Yeah, well, Mr. Radich busts, or not. It's weird how he gets kind of like in more trouble than I would think for like getting in an accident.
He shouldn't have to go to the principal's office for wiping out, but like somehow he does. And then that spirals him into.
And we haven't mentioned his weird Guardian Angels New York City vigilante group apparel, you know? The beret, the beret with the punk image does make it look like you are you're a vigilante,
like some sort of revolutionary.
No, like do you not know,
like, maybe
isn't the Guardian Angels, is that not the name?
Or are you thinking like
I know
like
what
the
Guardian
the
Angels is like 1970s New York, but it's
red
beret.
One of the Warriors gangs, like basically like they were the Berets or whatever.
What I'm saying
they were like a real thing in New York City. It was like a bunch of people that would go around New York City and like beat up criminals.
Yeah, it was like ultra neighborhood watch.
Okay.
They would just be like, you're being dicks in New York, so we're gonna fuck you up. But I don't think Joey Jeremiah ever had enough backbone to ever even claim something like that.
No, but he would definitely claim the look. I think that's
right
up his alley. So the next scene, that scene follows after Joey gets sent to the office. Caitlin and Susie, they're outside and they're just fucking checking out Rick hard, giving him eyes.
It's weird how quickly in this episode, I think he's hot turns to pity. But at first they're like, he's cute. I heard he was on probation, loving the bad boys.
And he failed. He failed. He should be in grade 9.
That's right. Yeah. Or grade 8, actually.
Oh,
he's always held back
in
grade
7. Now, and he should be in grade 8.
Yeah, that's. But he failed. They're like, they mentioned too, like, what did he get probation for? He's always got lots of bruises.
Yeah.
Maybe he gets in fights.
Maybe he's tough as hell. We should date him.
I am sad that no one said he's on probation for being so cute. Or stealing my heart or anything like that.
This was not a cutesy episode, man.
They've indicated that these girls are apparently amateur comedians. They could have really done something more in that scene.
They definitely could have stepped it up. Like right away, you guys just punched that scene up like 50% at least.
Yeah.
So when Joey gets to the office, that's where he starts like lying right away.
Oh my God. I think Joey Jeremiah taught me how to lie to everyone all the time.
Yeah, that's just Troy. That's just what Troy does. Just lies that aren't necessary. Like he
doesn't
lie about proper things. It's like It's just, it doesn't matter how you hurt your face,
what happened
really.
To you, I wiped out on my bike is a perfectly fine answer, or like someone got in the way of whatever, blah, blah, blah. But he's like, oh, you know, I was like saving babies or whatever it was. There's a kid.
And that's what he does. He just fucking goes with it. Yeah. So then he gets called into the office, and this is something. This is the first time the principal's been in a scene, but he's never actually in the scenes. It's just a voice.
It just was a door that said principal.
Yeah, and like I think this Doris, the secretary, kind of just turned on the PA and said, "Joey Jeremiah, to see you again." Like, just it's like I don't know. It's so unnecessary to not show him. Like they could.
Yeah, their PA system looked like Hal from fucking 2001, so.
And we do need to mention that while his shirt was supposed to just be a sound effect, he was wearing a Rat-A-Tat shirt. He was wearing a Rat-A-Tat shirt before they were a band, so that's pretty impressive. Yeah. He's a trendy guy, we've established.
Joey Jeremiah should have been the new Drake, like the first Drake, you know? He was way cooler. Years ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
And the secretary just makes an announcement that it's going to be school photo day, which is, I guess, our B story in this episode.
Yeah.
It's A story, obviously, and then the C story.
Oh, they
Susie,
all,
Caitlin.
They all, it comes together so beautifully.
that whole photo day, I want to dress like a slut, but my mom will be mad for it. yeah. I mean, if you want to dress like a slut, do your thing, you know?
Yeah, but photo day is really, that's what the episode's actually about. Because, like, how are you going to go to photo day if your dad beats you and you have a black eye? Or if your mom cuts up your coat and you don't have a good coat? And then everything that happens is just collateral damage.
I am glad.
That is the serious issue.
That's jumping ahead. Sorry, I almost jumped ahead again.
Well, the next thing, as they're making the photo day announcement, Steph is walking down the hall with Spike. And you see Steph, she's not in her slut gear yet. She's just got her frumpy kind of outfit. Yeah. She makes her way into the washroom and just starts changing. Was that weird for you guys, or did you remember that?
I knew that was going to happen.
No, we knew that was going to happen. I do, and then her friend immediately starts slut-shaming her, which we can all say is entirely unreasonable.
But pretty hot, though. It was pretty hot watching them. No.
I do agree that slut-shaming isn't good, but I feel like I really like when Vula is a bitch to Steph, though, because she was so nerdy in the first episode, and now she just like goes out of her way to just like stick it to Steph because she was such a bitch.
But
it's like at that point you're like, well, this is why you don't have any friends.
Yeah,
you're not a nerd, you're just a dick.
Sometimes you just gotta forgive and forget, you know. And also, she doesn't even shame her. She says like, your mom's gonna be pissed. She's using that chick's mom to like to tell her what she wants. It's very weak sauce.
It is a bitchy thing because she says, that's how you're dressing for photo day. I'd like to see your mom's face when she sees those pictures. So it is like she's cutting
sure. That's like slut shame and also like,
but I'm not gonna commit to saying it myself. I'm gonna hide behind your mom while I slut shame.
And there's also the thing of like, I might rat you out. She's a shit friend. I don't like this chick.
I stand by Vula, I think, in this one. And I just feel like she's so badass. Because, like, Steph just keeps trying to apologize. She's not having any of it. Bitchy, but I respect it.
Yeah, but, like, there's some point where you're like, sir, it is weird. Sir, I thanked one person instead of the, like, I feel like you can thank two people in a speech.
Sorry, like.
She should have.
That is true. That's a very good point. But what did you say her name was again?
Vula.
Vula?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's why she didn't thank her on stage, because she didn't want to. She didn't want to thank someone whose name sounds like a part of the female genitalia.
All I'm saying is Vula's a goddamn bully.
She is. It's just interesting to me because it's like, especially watching them now, just see over these four episodes, like she's totally like she's coming into her own. I didn't realize that when I watched it when I was younger.
Oh yeah,
coming
I'm
into
her
all alone because no one will be her friend anymore.
I'd date her if I was in grade 7, but like. She's a bully.
Like a girl with a cape, right?
That's right. She did look like a wizard at that one point.
Yeah, she 100% looked like a wizard. She was getting her fucking school photo done at Hogwarts.
So the next scene's in Miss Avery's class. Rick walks in reading his magazine, and Kaylee and Susie are just staring at him again.
Straight up.
Like four, they're like 5 feet away from
him
talking
about
him.
Maybe, I think that he might be the next row behind them, but maybe they're two rows in front of him, and they just turn around and start talking about him. And that whole scene, I was like, He can definitely fucking hear you. There's no way he can't hear you right now.
This is where we see the turn of attraction to pity, though, when they're like, he's so... Let's try and make him smile just once.
Yeah,
and
we can. Like, we can that make went him from you, smile.
That went from you wanting to bang him to now you want to make him smile once. This got sad real fast.
Yeah, like if he knew that, he'd be pretty pissed off. Oh, yeah. He'd be like, I smile, you fucking cunt.
Yeah, I smile when my dad's not beating me, when my dad's not throwing away my motorcycle magazines. Like, he has lots of reasons to smile. Just they're never around for it.
Yeah, they're not bad jokes. That's not what makes them laugh.
Although those jokes were remarkably bad.
They were really bad. Even for like 1987, they were bad.
But it was 1987, them being like, but we got to write these for kids.
Yeah.
So the clear error they made in helping him with his problem is they went for street jokes.
Yep.
When really they should have gone for street justice beat up his dad. I think we can. There is a line I need to acknowledge. Jeremiah says photo day is going to be the four J's, which is Joey Jeremiah in his jean jacket.
That's right.
I frequently say I like a girl with double D's, and what that means is denim on denim.
Oh.
So yeah, you know.
You and Joey, man, the same ilk right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Too bad your name wasn't like two D's as well. Yeah. Then you'd be your 4 D's, 6 D's maybe. I took it there.
That's too many D's. On the dance floor.
Throw some D's on that.
Throw some D's on it.
Here's the thing about child abuse. I got nothing for that. I just really wanted to say that.
If ever there was a time. So yeah, when Joey's telling Tim about the four J's, Mr. Radich overhears them and he stops him. And he just like says, come on, Joey, stop talking in class.
Yeah. I've already told you this is not a place that you can socialize.
And then the scene just kind of ends like on a close up where it says photo day tomorrow.
Photo day.
I mean,
they
were definitely at some points trying to do some experimental things with both children's television in terms of script writing and topic discussion. But also someone was behind that camera just wiling out every once in a while. Like, no, I got a vision for this.
And then it's the end of the day, and everyone's kind of leaving school, and we see Joey Jeremiah skateboarding home. And this is the first time that I noticed he was pushing Mongo.
Which is a huge problem. A huge problem. Which
it's tight. I like it.
Again, knocks him off. Now he once again cannot claim he's king of the skateboarders anymore, now that he's pushing Mongo.
I mean, he's 13 years old.
But you never... I don't know.
But if you start pushing Mongo, you never stop. It's just you're done.
He didn't have the internet. How is he going to know? He just gets on a skateboard and rides, and it works.
He should have just watched any skateboard video and seen no one.
Where are you going to get a skateboard video in 1987?
It is hard.
They're similar.
Can you go back to 1987 right now?
They're similar to pornos. Skateboard videos and pornos were very much the same thing.
He didn't have an older brother, so he pushed Mongo.
So, Mongo? Mongo.
Mongo.
So
whatever. He pushed like an idiot either way.
They would get passed around by groups of boys. That's how you'd get them. One boy would have gone to New York City with his family on vacation, and they would have accidentally gone into a store and his parents would have picked it up for him, and then you all watch that video until it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, you would just run out the tape at some point, it would just die or split.
Well, maybe later on in this season Joey will get a friend with a skateboard video.
A friend of mine got Fulfill the Dream. When we were kids, he was out in the East Coast actually.
Nice.
And a skate shop there just had Fulfill the Dream that you could still buy because people there didn't realize that that's not a thing you leave on the shelves. Mm-hmm. And he picked it up, and then we, oh man, VHS copy of Fulfill the Dream.
I think Blind Video Days. My brother had that one, that was a good one to get passed down for sure. It's like Spike Jones one.
Ed Samurai Pizza Cat.
Animaniacs, maybe?
Oh, yeah, buddy. That's Pinky, tight. The Brain.
So Joey gets home, and he tells another lie to his mom about how his nose got hurt.
Which I liked. I liked that he lied to his mom, which that was tight. But then he fucking has this crazy panic attack and then is like, hey, this is child abuse that you fucked up my coat.
Let me slow this one down. Okay. So he gets home.
This is a big scene.
He gets home, and he finds that his mom has cleaned up his room. And he's pretty pissed about it because his shit was exactly where he wanted it, I guess.
Clearly, he just the reason he was so upset is because he had Victoria's Secret catalogs in there, which your parents can't get mad at you for having because technically you're not doing anything wrong, but you're just very embarrassed.
Yeah.
But she says, we didn't even throw any of it out. It's all in a box in the basement. Relax.
Yeah, but what you don't realize is the box, he goes downstairs, and the box is there, and everything's in there for him, but it just has shame written on the box.
They don't show that in the episode, but it's almost certainly true.
It's implied.
Because it was 87, I'm pretty sure it would have been a Sears catalog. Though, yeah, not I mean, it's just secret.
87 in Canada, too. So, yeah, definitely Sears.
Definitely Sears. Or maybe the Bay. Also, Joey's mom is sewing up his jean jacket.
She's fixing his pants with a patch from his jean
the
jacket.
The center of the back of his jean
she
jacket.
She just cut a big square.
So the thing I'll say is his mom is a bit of a dopey idiot.
I'm going to say straight up bitch. Like that, you know, if you're cutting the center of the back of a jean jacket out, you know, like I'm ruining this coat right
now. And so there's several things So Joey, you know, is insisting he needs a beat up jean jacket because that's how you're supposed to wear them. But there's several things that kind of invalidate his punk status here. A, his mom is doing his sewing, punk sew. B, his mom is doing his sewing with thread and not dental floss. Huge mistake.
I'm gonna challenge you on that one. Sometimes you just don't want your crotch to smell like mint all the time, so you use thread.
Now, if he was a real punk, he would have a minty crotch. And number three, that jacket is fine in several ways.
Yeah, says you.
She cut a hole in the back. He needs it for photo day. Photo day is happening in the front, bud. It's not like a mugshot kind of situation where we at least get the side.
Yeah, then
the jacket's fine.
Then you just have to be concerned about the rest of the day where you just have a jean jacket that has a 4-inch by 4-inch square hole just in the back.
We've already established that he doesn't need to be wearing the jacket for weather. It's nice out, so we could just put it on for the photo. And also,
yeah, but then he's a poser. He's just wearing the jacket for a photo.
Well, he's
That's
already
bullshit.
A poser. We've established this.
Yeah, but you can't admit to yourself that you are. That's what a poser is.
And the last thing is that the hole was smaller than a back patch. He could have put a sweet Judas Priest back patch on there.
There's no way this 13-year-old kid knows about back patches. He only knows about doodling on his coat.
Yeah, that's really weird. When he's got, it's like faux tag. It's like the worst tags ever. Like no ability.
His mom has already taught him that if you want to fix something, just cut a hole in the center of something else. So just cut your Rat-a-tat shirt up and make a Rat-a-tat back patch.
He also explains why he doesn't want to wear the new jacket. It's like, if I wear the new jacket, I'll look like a broomhead.
Which is his go-to.
I love
to insult broomhead.
Broomhead is just, I can't believe that.
It sounds pretty racist.
It seems like there's a racial. Like I can't figure out what race it is, but there is a racial tone to that.
It does sound super racist, but it's just clean cuts. Is that what it is? Just like people that like have regular haircuts.
Like a
haircut.
Crew cut is like
yeah,
a crew cut
and
yeah.
like proper clothes.
It
khakis.
Seems more like it's a dork. Like someone who's not like I don't know if it necessarily means it, but I guess it does come. I've been trying to figure out what it actually comes from, and I think you're probably closer with someone with like super straight laced. I think that's the idea behind it.
Crew cut and then tan colored clothes. I guess.
Super.
But
I guess just like suburbs class instead of city class, which he is.
And but then, I think the main problem with Broomhead is blank head is never going to sound not racial.
I think you're right.
You can't talk about a head.
About someone's head?
Yeah.
Maybe if you're like sweet lid, but that's not. It just makes it seem racially charged when head is the suffix on it.
Yeah.
And then Joey kind of freaks out, and he says, you guys ruin everything. This is child abuse, which you're like.
Yeah, but the. Which is a very good scene if he could act.
And that's
he
what
did.
Was
there was no conviction in that child abuse line. He was like, this is kind of child abuse.
I mean,
like, I don't care.
There could have been the undercurrent lesson that don't say things are child abuse when your friends are getting beaten, but he does not learn that lesson at all in this episode.
I feel like the writer's room, when they decided to make Joey say that that was child abuse, like, they high-fived themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they were happy about that.
I feel like writers learned that lesson, but I don't think Joey Jeremiah learned that lesson at all.
It's the old classic line of, that's not child abuse, this is child abuse.
I see. A lot of his friends get abused through the course of this show.
That's growing up in Canada, I guess, right?
I feel like maybe, like, he's so obnoxious that if your child is friends with him, it's just so taxing on you that you just take it out on your child. You want to beat him, but you know you can't do that, so you beat your own child.
Joey is, like, the bad... It's not like Joey's a good guy. Like, he's kind of a dick. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
He runs that town, though.
He does. He has, like, he's got some style. And there is at least consequences for him that he pays. In the next scene, it starts with Rick rolling up to the school on his sweet bike. Mm-hmm. And Joey and Tim, they're just walking up to the school, and Joey's complaining about his jacket and how it's... Or he first starts off by saying it's child abuse, which Rick overhears, and he's like, I know what that's like. Mm-hmm. But then he just realizes he's only talking about his jacket.
So, that's also the scene where they're standing by the bike rack, mm-hmm. and... Rick is, like, standing in such a way that he's flexing his, like, 13-year-old muscles. They were trying to make him look tough as fuck, and so he was, like, all stretched out, you know? I was like, oh, man, they're really trying to make this 13-year-old look like he's the tough kid at school.
He does, like, a lot of arms crossed and stuff, too.
Arms crossed or, like, tricep leaning against something so it looks like you're huge.
It's always just like, hey, Jeremiah, too.
Yeah,
like,
Jeremiah, we're not buds.
I got a jacket if you got the bucks. Something like that he drops.
I mean, it is good, thanks, buddy. Don't call me buddy. You're not my buddy. This is a business transaction.
Yeah, totally. Rick is kind of like a hard ass in that way, too. Like, he acts like he's 18.
Everyone else
is like 12.
Yeah, well, because he's seen some shit, you know?
But he's very cold on the outside, but then as soon as he gets Joey into his apartment, he gives him the soda.
He gives him one of two colas.
So the next scene, after there, Rick has agreed to have Joey over to his place to get the jacket. Rick walks inside, and Susie and Caitlin, they're going to do their first big joke. You remember this great gem? She says, Why did the turtle cross the road? Because it was the chicken's day off.
Oh, that's so clever. Honestly, that's the point where I was like, I'm going to kill myself now. This is what you call a joke that got on TV. Like, yes. This is a television.
Well, here's the problem. I mean, if it was a good joke, he would have smiled. And then, I mean, in their heads, his child abuse would have been fixed. And then that would have been the end of the episode.
Maybe that should have been the end of the episode. Just put a good joke in and everyone's happy.
They couldn't do that. Like, they even did, like, a ba-dun-dun.
Oh, yeah.
That was, like, it was...
I mean, yeah, it was supposed to be intentionally bad, but it seemed like it was intentionally bad and intentionally, like, poorly written. Like, they were like, this is the first thing that would... Maybe it was great, because it might have just been like... They were like, this is the first thing that would come into these stupid teenagers' minds, and they think it will work.
I mean, it is great that their storyline has no resolution.
No, they have nothing.
Their storyline is entirely unnecessary.
Their story... They could have not been involved with Rick the whole episode and just seen him smiling at the end, and it would have been the same,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
it didn't need any of those at all. It was just basically to show Rick judging them every time they did a stupid joke. He gave great... cut eye afterwards. He's just like,
yeah, he was hard as fuck.
Yeah, I mean,
those girls.
He's definitely better at frowning than he is at smiling. I see why he chooses to do that all the time.
Yeah, we're looking at the freeze frame from the end of the episode, and he's smiling, and he shouldn't be. This is what we've been looking at the whole time we've been doing this podcast, is just Rick's horrible smile.
It's like he never had his baby teeth out yet or something. It's weird.
It's like his dad knocked out all his teeth, and he was like, I'm just going to jam half-chewed chiclets in there in the general shape.
Well, his dad knocked out all his teeth, and then he put them back in, but in the wrong order.
Okay.
They're just all over the place.
Yeah.
So then it gets back to the photo day story with Vula and Steph. Again, Steph asks Vula for help. She even apologizes again.
Hey, I'm sorry that I fucked you over. Can we be friends again?
And Steph has the conundrum, everyone will laugh at me if I wear my home clothes. and my mom will be mad if I wear my school clothes.
Which was really good, because I thought that was a really clever way of saying, like, slutty clothes versus, like, at home appropriate mm-hmm. school clothes. That doesn't mean slut clothes.
But I mean, this is also a storyline that nothing happens in their storyline either.
No.
She makes a big decision, and it will probably affect her life at some point later on.
But the thing is, the first conversation they have, she's like, I want to wear the clothes that I like, but my mom is like a Puritan or white supremacist or something. so I have to wear a smock to school. And then she's like, well, your mom's going to be mad at you, and I hate you. And then their second conversation is, I want to wear the clothes I like, but my mom's going to be mad at me. And she's like, well, your mom's going to be mad at you, and I hate you. But that's probably
the first, like, 30 episodes of this show is that's the struggle that What's-Her-Name's going through.
Yeah,
with the
clothes.
Yeah,
Bula and Steph and the clothes.
And then eventually it boils over.
I'm just saying, they knew the main storyline was pretty heavy hitting and it had some sweet jean jackets in it, so they really phoned it in for the other storylines.
It's true. It's hard to even really tell where the storylines kind of end because they're so connected. Thing I find weird, though, is Steph's, like, home clothes, I don't feel like people are going to laugh at her. They see her walk up to school every day in those, and she's like, people are talking to her.
Yeah, she changes at school, which means there's a chance that every single person that goes to that school is going to see her before she gets to the washroom. So it's not out of the ordinary.
No.
Everyone could just be assuming that she's wearing those are not clothes. That's a protective barrier to keep her sweet clothes from being damaged by the elements on the way to school.
By the elements of parenthood.
Yeah, definitely keeping her safe. And Vula has a sweet diss at the end of the seed. After she listens to Steph's problem, she's just like, yeah, that's your problem.
Which is cold. just a bland statement of fact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ice cold, though. Delivered super cold.
Deal with it yourself, fool. And then she throws her books down the stairs.
Motherfucker. And then the next scene is Joey. The school has ended. Joey is and Tim walk out to meet Rick, and they see his sweet bike, jumps up on it. Rick gives him the, like, cross-arm stare down, and he just backs off right away.
Well, again, proving that JJ's a poser is you do not, uninvited, get on someone else's bike. That's rule number one.
Well, that's also, he's a skateboarder. He doesn't know bike rules.
Joey plays by his own rules, I think,
that's
a little
true.
Bit. So they're going to Rick's house so Joey can buy the jacket. And Joey wants Tim to go with him, but Tim's just like, fuck no, I'm not going to do this.
Yeah,
he was
no.
super scared to
this
go to Rick's.
This is too fucking scary for me, man.
And there's another sweet skateboard montage with Rick riding his bike.
He pulls right up into the driveway.
He does those little, I don't even know what those are called when you would stop that way and skid around. It's like, I don't know, a cheesy 80s stop with just the kicktail. It's not a power slide. It's just turning around pretty much. And you thought you recognized Rick's place, the apartment?
Oh, that's me. You. Yeah. That's. I'm pretty sure I know exactly where that is. It's like a. What's the intersection? It's actually really near Degrassi Street, which is weird because Degrassi. There's no school on Degrassi Street. Like, Degrassi wasn't filmed on Degrassi Street.
No, the school was in Etobicoke, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably why they chose there, because you can't choose an actual school. Because then when they're like, oh, there's child abuse happening and at this school, that's just a real place that people are
getting abused at.
Yeah. Or get concerned about. It has to be a fictional school.
When they get up to Rick's apartment, Joey's like, oh, man, I love your place. It's so cool. Your mom must be awesome.
Yeah, your mom never cleans this place. This is great. My mom just cleaned my room, and I hate her. She's a dumb bitch.
And then Rick says, I don't have a mom.
And Joey's like, oh, that's pretty cool, too, I guess.
Yeah, he's like, I don't need any more information on this. You've summarized it completely.
That is the saddest sentence you could say, I think, too, right? Like, just makes everything worse when you say that. I don't have a mom. It's just like,
yeah, not even I don't know my mom or my mom's dead. I don't have one. I don't know how I came into existence.
You just apparated one day. Then Rick offers Joey a pop, which I thought was a pretty nice move.
Yeah,
I was surprised.
Yeah, I mean, we see some decent character development.
Especially since they're not even friends at this point. He's just there to buy that coat.
I mean, he is charging him $15 for a coat in 1986, so he's making a pretty good.
I feel like he's doing our used jacket, too. It's super old.
Like, I've bought a you know, like a better jacket than that for less than that now. So.
Sorry, Trey?
I was just going to say, you know, once again, none of these kids know about the economy of jackets or skateboards or bikes.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I'm just saying $15 for a jacket.
Magazines.
$15 for a jacket, that's pretty huge. Also, can we talk about, he seems to really love his brother, but I also think maybe this kid's a sociopath because he really loves his brother and then just gives his jacket away like it's nothing. He's like, oh, what? Yeah, I'll sell it my brother for $15.
That is kind of weird, actually.
He needed
like, you would
the $15. So that his dad wouldn't beat him for Coke again. And
Coca-Cola, not cocaine. That's not...
Whichever.
There's, there's no proof that it's cocaine.
No, he needed the money. That was his big struggle. And it was a way of making a friend.
That's true. Well, because when he's showing him the jacket, Joey notices the posters of motorcycles on the wall.
Motorcycle. Is that a wheel hanging on your wall?
He was super into it. And Rick got like so... When he was describing riding the motorcycle with his brother, he's like, you get going so fast. It's like nothing can stop you. Just like...
It's like no dad's fist can stop you.
Exactly. The brother wasn't... He doesn't actually love his brother. He just loves his brother more than he loves his dad.
He doesn't love his brother. He just loves the concept of freedom, which his brother represents.
Yeah. Ooh. Digging deep. Yeah, I think you nailed it there.
Obviously.
I mean, his brother's probably a dick, too, let's be honest. It's like, oh, was that you're getting beaten? I'm leaving. See ya. Yeah.
But it kind of...
Twice the beatings for you now, idiot.
Oh, I'm way better than Dad. I can beat you twice as hard.
And right on cue, Rick's dad comes in.
Yeah.
Just like total oblivious dick to Joey and just like, just fucking mouthing off.
Which I have a problem with this because I think that an abusive parent would be better at hiding it in front of company.
Yeah.
And like, you don't let a loose end like that just like scramble out of the apartment.
His dad's not a murderer.
He's just got a crazy temper.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're like, making it sound like he's like a murderer.
Yeah. That's what I am making it sound like, because he kind of is a little bit of one.
Oh, I mean, he's obviously a bad person, but you're like, you don't let a loose end like that, Derek. How do you not loose end?
You, like, smooth it over. Oh, this was an accident. Here's some ice cream for you and your friend, and like...
But that implies his dad has any agency, where he just seems like an agent of chaos.
But if he
doesn't,
then he's just a murderer. There's...
I feel like it was a different time. Like I feel like people were still, because it's like 1987.
Yeah. People were still sort of okay with child abuse.
They were. I could see this character
where there's
not
still
seeing,
there's still
like,
families that spank
I mean,
their
like,
kids
you
or whatever.
You can't hit your kids unless your kids are like dicks. Like if they're just because some kids are just dicks.
I
can hit them. That was the idea.
What
this time.
Year was it no longer okay to beat your kid because he gave his friend a Coca-Cola?
The instant the internet became a thing, like a regular thing.
Because Coca-Cola is more abundant now that the internet's around?
No, because, like, you can, like, talk about it.
Well, it was so crazy because, like, Rick's just trying to, like, he knows he's about to get beat down.
Yeah,
and
he's like,
you should
get out of here.
You should get out of here. And
the dad was like, it was weird. He was like, I just want a Coca-Cola. And, I mean, he had the two Coca-Colas, and neither of them had taken sips yet. He was just holding two Coca-Colas. If he had just been like, I opened a Coca-Cola for you, Dad. So, like, bad improving on the kid's part. I mean, he probably could have avoided a whooping that day.
Yeah, but. And bad friendship on Joey Jeremiah's part, because that dude can lie his dick off.
Yeah.
And he did not come in with a quick lie.
No. They weren't yes-anding the scene. But you were saying the violence was pretty casual. I'm gonna say in this scene, when that door is still open, his dad's arms.
But it
full
doesn't. That's it.
Back,
it doesn't.
And it comes down. It comes down.
You never just, see if it makes any connection.
Yeah,
because
they can't legally do that.
I know that. I'm just saying it's very interesting that they have to gloss over.
But like that door closes and you hear him getting beaten.
That was, I agree, it was the
it's
sound
pretty,
was
yeah.
intense
that's,
on that one.
That's the harshest you can show a kid getting beaten at noon on television.
I think they could have done better.
No.
I don't think they could have done any better than they did.
Yeah.
they could have really got graphic with it, you know?
They couldn't. They literally couldn't. I know.
And then afterwards, this scene where Rick is just kind of like super sad after getting beat up. They do a cut so then they can add the tears to his eyes, and he's like laying down. But his dad's calling through from the other room like it was spouse abuse. Like he's I'm sorry. I'll never do it again.
And can we talk about how poorly mic'd this scene was? That kid was just talking into that mattress, and I couldn't understand anything he was saying.
He was saying, I wish I could get out of here. I wish I could leave.
But, like, that was 100% to mattress.
See, that's I'm going to disagree with you again because, I mean, it was into the mattress, but I felt like that was more authentic. Just, like, the kid crying into his...
But they could have put, like...
They could have had a lapel under the mic or under the pillow.
A little lav or something in the pillow.
I like that they didn't. It seemed more raw. it had what the violent scenes was missing.
If you were in the room with Rick there, that's what you would have experienced.
Exactly, yeah.
You were Rick a little bit in that moment.
No, just in
life. In life. Meant to tell you, Troy Stark played Rick.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the one character I got to look up what happened to him. So the next scene, though, after Rick just busting some tears, it's the next day at school. They show the photographers pulling their gear out of the bag. Joey runs into Tim, who asks him how it went, and he was just like, he said, oh, the jacket looks good. He's like, Joey says, everything looks good on me, because he's the coolest dude ever.
Classic line.
And then Tim asks, oh, was it cool? And Joey says, yeah. End of scene.
Yeah, pretty good. I mean, I guess the
Q plot in this episode is, which is again just useless and resolved very easily. Girl has zit on forehead for photo day.
Mm-hmm.
Slightly changes part. Problem resolved.
I don't know if that's a plot as much as it's just like a flavor line.
I said Q plot. You dwell on it for like 30 seconds.
This is weird. I don't like this show. Well, each episode is 29 minutes. And like a scene like that, you'd be like, oh, they must have needed more time. They did not need more time.
But what the thing about this show is that they had a cast of like 20 kids.
Easily, yeah.
And they had to try and get as many of them into each episode as they could just to establish not only the environment, but to establish the fact, like to keep them working and keep the kids on set, right?
Yeah.
So, like, doing, obviously that is just something where it's like, well, I guess we have to give fucking what's-her-name a line, so we'll give her, a fucking... picture day thing, and that's her line for the episode.
It's kind of planting the seed because the next episode is like she's the main story in that one, so I guess that's why they're trying to like, Melanie.
Exactly, remind you that she exists, and then she comes back next week, and you're like, oh yeah, the chick with the zit.
Did you guys watch Freaks and Geeks?
Oh, buddy.
Yeah. I kind of felt like they would do the same thing with their characters. They would kind of like plant the seeds of them, and like, They would kind of open up the stories a little bit too, and I find that similar to the way Degrassi.
I will
did
say
it.
That I feel that this whole episode is maybe the basis for Corey in Boy Meets World, like just for his whole character.
Oh, Sean.
Sean Hunter, Corey's best friend.
Boy Meets World. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
I
think
so.
Sean.
You really read Corey differently than I did.
Yeah, Corey had a tough ass life. No, for Sean. Sorry. And then like he moves in with the. It's not his brother, but it's his motorcycle foster dad.
Right.
Can we quickly talk about the funniest thing that ever happened in Boy Meets World?
Sure.
Okay. So it's actually a pretty heavy episode of Boy Meets World because Corey is feeling depressed that his dad just owns a grocery store or like runs a grocery store or whatever because he's like my dad's a failure basically and I'm going to be a failure too. And he's like, I just never won anything. I've never stood out in anything. Like, I've never been exceptional at anything. And then he's in his bedroom and he leans against the wall and he leans beside a poster that has a picture of celery on it and says celery. And it's an amazing gag in what is otherwise a pretty serious episode.
That's incredible.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that's not bad. Although, like, now I just wish I had a celery poster.
Seriously. Vegetable posters, all right. I've lost my place here. I'm just trying to find
that
it again.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. It was great. Oh, I think we were talking about Melanie Zit. So that was ridiculous. Yeah, and then it's Rick taking his picture, and Susie and Caitlin are like 2 feet away from him while he's taking the picture.
Yeah.
And like just waiting for him to smile with his, he's got that huge black eye welt on his face.
That the photographer has to be like, the photographer doesn't ask.
Like turning his face.
He doesn't ask him like, hey kid.
Face. He's turning the bruise away from
the
camera.
What's going on in your life right now? Like, are you okay? He's just like, yeah, get that part out. And
don't point the bruise at the camera,
please. Yeah.
There's a lot of adults touching kids' faces to look at wounds in this episode, like Joey a couple times.
There's a lot of wounds in this episode.
A lot of wounds. A lot of cover-ups. So then Joey is sitting outside while Rick's getting his picture taken, talking to Tim, and he's just like, Tim, what would you do if you knew someone who's been getting beat up by their parents? And Tim's like, who? It's like, could it be more obvious? You know, he just went to Rick's. He's looking at Rick.
And again, the only time he can't lie is when it actually counts.
Yeah, but that's when the pressure's on.
Who are you
on.
Talking about? Nobody. It's a rhetorical question. I've just been thinking about kids getting beat
up. I'm just
a lot
asking,
lately.
Like, you know how we ask each other questions, like, would you suck a dick for $1 million? Like, what would you do if you found out one of your friends was being beaten by their dad? Like, just rhetorical questions that we all ask each other, you know?
Yeah, super serious rhetorical questions. So Rick walks out after his photo's been taken there, probably a terrible class picture that his dad's not going to buy anyway, and is like, hey, Jeremiah, where's that $15?
I guarantee that, like, you go to his house in, like, 3 months, and, like...
There's a photo of him on the wall with sample
exactly.
watermark
it has,
on it.
It has the watermark, and that's it. In a frame. It's in a frame, though.
Oh, that's so sad. He's the saddest character ever. And Joey's only got 10 of the $15 for some reason. Like, he's such a dick, he doesn't bring the full $15.
I'll get the rest after school, man.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's Joey again says, I don't want to be a broomhead. I need this jacket to take the picture. That's, like, so important to him to have this jacket in the picture.
Yeah, but, like, also, what does Rick need $15 for so badly by the end of the school day?
I guess it's just the principal, you know, he wants to be, I'm Rick, you don't fuck with me, you don't screw me over. He's just like, he wants that name behind him, I guess. That, and he's troubled, so he's just super intense about things.
Maybe he's trying to pay his dad not to beat him.
That's true. Oh man, if he makes that $15, his dad can quit his job he hates.
He just wants to fill the fridge with Coke one time. Just like, got the Coke, Dad.
I provide all these jean jackets I gotta move before the end of the day, otherwise I'm gonna get whooped.
Joey, though, when he's walking away, he's like, Rick, do you want to talk about things? And Rick's like, no. He's like, but the and he's just like, gives him that like point and stare.
Yeah,
that's super
intense. Good move.
Which is, like, also, again, like, a real sign that he did not want to, like, actually have that conversation. He's like, do you want to talk about things? About you getting beaten by your dad in the middle of the hallway in the middle of the day? I have to go in and get my picture taken. Like, I'm up next, so we can't actually talk. But do you want to? No? Cool.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about it with you. But I would like to know, like, if you want to talk about it. Because if you do, I will avoid you for the next few days.
It's, like, almost nice of Joey, but not.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, then Vula takes her picture where she's wearing, like, a huge dress and a cape over her.
Yeah, she's wearing, like, a sweater and then, like, a...
Yeah, she looks like a wizard. She 100% looks like she's dressing up as a wizard for photo day.
She looked like she had about nine or ten too many layers.
Yeah, it was like she was, like, trying to punish her friend. She was like, I'm gonna slut shame you by wearing so many layers, just more layers than anyone has ever worn before.
And Steph decides to go with her school clothes. Nice way of saying it, right?
School clothes, also known as club clothes.
This, it was interesting because the whole episode I had been like, you know, your school clothes aren't that much, like, they're not that much more revealing than your regular clothes. Well, like basically,
in the other scenes, it was not as bad.
Okay. In the previous scene, her school clothes was basically the exact same shirt she was wearing, except the sleeves were just cut off. It was still a button-up shirt. The neckline still went to the top. And then I was like, I don't know why she's having this dilemma. And then her photo day picture, I was like, oh, okay, never mind.
Yeah, you got to go all out on photo day, though.
Yeah, no, I can understand now.
Yeah, but I will say, like, that plot line might have been written just because I think that's the one character that has tits in this show, and it probably is old enough that they can be like, yeah, it's not weird that this character has.
I still find it weird.
It's a little bit weird, but it's like less weird than if like one of the there's a lot really of younger weird. Chicks.
Yeah,
on
the
that
Melanie, the girl with the zit problem, for instance, she seems younger than Steph.
Oh, a lot. Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing that happened here was. So you know, she gets slut shamed again, and she kind of feels bad for a second. And her response to that is she's like, "Oh, I'm being slut shamed. I feel bad." And then she hikes up her top to try and like cover herself up. But then all she's really doing is hiking up her boobs because it's like a tube top.
Yeah,
she's just making her boobs more prominent.
But I mean, that's. What protects you from being slut-shamed is having a great rack.
The next scene, Kate and Susie have another big joke to try on Rick.
Oh, God, the worst thing on earth.
They put on pig noses.
Pig noses, yeah.
And just start oinking at him
in
the hallway.
And I'm pretty sure his brother for sure taught him to never trust pigs. So they're never going to be friends.
See, my problem with this the whole joke thing is that he's the only one that they're trying to make laugh. So they just keep coming up to him and saying really weird shit or doing weird shit to him in the hall. And like that kid probably is a little paranoid at that point and probably thinks they're just making fun of him.
Yeah.
I'm surprised one of those chicks didn't end up with a black eye just out of like
defensive rage. Deserving it?
Yeah. I feel like when Rick looks at them after the pig oinking, he's looking at them like they're like a little bit on the spectrum, you know, like they might be special needs or something. Yeah. He's not sure.
Here's the thing. It's totally fine if someone tells you a joke. If someone puts a pig nose on and oinks at you, that seems at your expense.
Yeah, yeah. That's definitely at your expense, especially since you're the only one that they're doing it to.
So, Rick blows him off, walks away. Then they're in Mr. Radish's class. Again, Tim starts talking to Joey, interrupting class, and like asks Joey, he's like, it's Rick, isn't it? You're a fucking detective, Tim. How'd you ever crack that one?
And my one friend that isn't you?
Yeah, you got it, Tim. But Mr. Radish hears Joey say that, and he's got busted for interrupting the class again. He gets
sent to
the principal's office. And the next scene, it just shows Joey walking out of the principal's office again. Yeah.
The door just saying principal.
Yeah.
He just got kicked out of the class where the door says language. Now he gets now he's getting kicked out of the principal's office where the door just says principal.
That was such a good catch earlier. Yeah, when it showed the Radish's class earlier, it just said language on the door instead of English.
English or French or language arts or whatever. It's just language.
Language. You know, good old language class.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is, I guess this, maybe this school believes there's only one true language. You speak English or you speak nothing.
Or you just show up every day and it's like, nope, we're doing Spanish today. Fucking
wheel of languages.
Yeah.
That'd be a pretty good class, actually.
Right?
Yeah.
You'd learn how to say hello in like 9 things. If you got English like spun on the wheel 3 times in a year, you'd actually like progress a little, but like
it's like why be good at just English when you could be kind of okay at every language almost. So when Joey walks out of the principal's office, he starts asking Doris a big hypothetical. He's like, "What do you do if you know someone who's being beat up by their parents?" And Doris like sees through it right away. And then Joey
can't lie. Is there also a subtle lesson here where it's like, if you lie too much, people will think your parents beat you up? Because if you hadn't lied about the injury, this all might have resolved itself much quicker and easier without any embarrassment to all JJ's parents there. If he just said, I fell skateboarding and that a teacher saw me fall skateboarding and sent me here. Then she wouldn't have been like, oh, you're getting beaten at home. She would have been like, oh, this kid knows someone that's being beaten at home. Oh, it's that kid that's obviously getting beaten at home.
Yeah, that's no one asks a question. Like, no, like the photographer should have like said something like, hey, this kid's got a huge black eye on his face.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, like with the instant something happens to Joey, people are like, what happened to you? The instant fucking Rick comes in with bruises, they're like, good. Good.
Yeah, because some kids deserve it.
So they're saying he does. So when Doris gets this story, Joey kind of just like blows it off.
He just
and
backs
leaves.
Out. No, yeah. He doesn't even. He does not even blow it off. He doesn't even like try and like sweep it under the rug at all. He just backs out of the room. He's like, I gotta go.
He really wants people to think his parents are beating him. He's trying real hard to.
Yeah. So then Doris just you see her going through the cards, and she's gonna call Children's Aid. Then there's this. This again, just this is the hallway scene where the kids are just like leaving class. I guess they're just trying to let that big moment that they're gonna call Children's Aid just sink in right there. Yeah. And just be like, this is getting real, guys.
She flips through the Rolodex. Yeah, that was great.
And then the next scene starts with Rick just like doing a little bit of work on his bike, and he's like, Jeremiah, $5. And then Joey's like, we got to go to my place to get it. And basically, Rick's like.
Trapped. It's entrapment.
Yeah. It's like, let's roll then. And when they're riding over to Joey's house, Rick's chain pops off. And he's just like, this was a bigger problem, I feel, than it should have been.
Well, yeah. I mean,
Easy fix.
I've never needed a tool to put my chain back on my bike.
Especially with how, like, watching the rest of the episode, he was that chain was fucking slack as shit. That could have just got like that wasn't a tight chain.
Yeah, that probably happens to him 2-3 times a ride because it's just like his bike's not set up properly.
I feel like he's always just like tweaking with his bike every time he gets to
school. Well he also fancies himself like a junior motorcycle man, right? Like he should know how to fix his bike because his brother fixes motorcycles and like that's his thing.
You would think. So when they get to Joey's house, he's got the toolbox for them for Rick to fix his bike. Some reason he needs it. They see another motorcycle outside of Joey's. It was a pretty sweet ride.
Sick ride, man.
Yeah.
And when they get inside, they find out that a member of Flock of Seagulls is there.
My pad also says Flock of Seagulls. Yeah. You know?
He's got classic.
Eventually that money runs out and you got to find a real job.
It was just such like the classic 80s cool guy.
But it's cool social worker, right? That's the 80s. That's the 80s. It's cool social worker.
He's like, I'm going to give back. That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
So this guy is, he sees Joey with the black eye and he asks, just like pretty much point blank, he's like, do your parents hit you? And he's like, no. His parents are like, no, we don't.
He's like, shut up, parents. I'm asking him.
And having been in this situation dozens of times before, I can tell you that they always separate you. They always give you your own little room. And they're like, hey, what's going on? And you're like, no. And then they're like, oh, okay.
You've been in that situation in a couple.
Well, not where of the parents accusing of beating or anything, but social worker or like guidance counselor or something like that. They're always going to separate you from what they believe to be the source of your problem.
Yeah, because you're not going to answer if they're right there.
Is this guy going to beat you up as soon as I leave? Okay. So I should go then?
I mean, the social worker, the credit I'll say to the social worker that maybe the tactic he was employing is when he said, I want to hear his story. It did sound like if he says yes, I'm going to beat you up in front of him.
Yeah, but once again, he looked like Flock of Seagulls, so he's not winning any
fights. But did you see Joey's dad? Like, he's...
Joey's dad raised Joey. I'm pretty sure he can fight.
Yeah, I feel like maybe. He's so scrawny, though.
I think he's a scrapper. He probably is the guy
he
that
raised the he raised
in two
the se-
2 seconds
wiener.
Into a fight. 2 seconds into a fight, that guy has a knife out. Just
that's true.
Every time, that's what he was known for in his generation of Degrassi Junior High. Out Jeremiah.
I feel like Rick might carry a knife.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And a gun one day. Ooh.
I hope so. That's Degrassi Senior High.
So then Joey, though, he does clear it up for the social worker being like, yeah, no, I just fell on, I fell into some bikes off my skateboard, you know, teacher saw it, whatever. And then he was like, well, who is getting hit? And Rick just like,
again, just can't lie when he can't. Who is getting hit? Other child with bruises that you're hanging out with?
And it just shows why he is a social worker because, you know, he was able to figure this out with such
And then he employed the, so now this is. I don't know if anyone's tried to be a social worker, but this is actually when you become a social worker, they actually issue you a motorcycle with the job because it just increases turnover rate like crazy. You're just getting kids out of bad situations left and right. You just go out, work on your bike a little bit, and they catch you doing it. You're like, Oh, I was just working on my hog. I heard you had some problems, buddy.
The like leather jacket transition. They do, is not included. Like, you got to be there for, like, 3 years before they give you that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's when you get your social worker tenure.
Your wings.
And when the social... Well, Rick runs outside first, tries to hop on his bike, but because the chain fell off two scenes ago...
I mean, thankfully they really just wrapped this up in a neat little package. They made sure there was no loose ends in this story.
I can just...
Except for all the loose ends in the other stories. But this story was tidy.
Also, like, if you really wanted to get out of there and your bike, the chain wasn't on, you could just stand on one pedal and push. You could get some pretty good speed up.
It's good. Well, not with that tiny front wheel.
Oh, that's true.
I just really like the idea of the writers in a room being like, well, after he runs out, though, he's just going to be a hop on his bike and get away. And they're like,
I mean, it would have been way better if he chased him down on a motorcycle and was like, your legs can't outrun 191 horses, buddy.
But then they would have had to have a scene where the camera actually, like, moved.
You see, that's like, that was probably it, and they realized they didn't have the budget for that, so they just did the scene where his chain falls off his bike.
So we'll do the motorcycle chase. Oh, wait. No, instead of that, let's just let's do that all, but, like, standing in one spot. Can we do a motorcycle chase in one spot?
Just have, like, them kind of do that cheesy thing where they just keep moving the camera by them.
Yeah, where green screen it out.
If you have a motorcycle going one way and a camera going the opposite direction, it appears as though the motorcycle is going twice as fast as it is. So that's a good way to cheat that.
Yeah, that's just physics.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is.
So when Flock of Seagulls starts to actually help Rick... He says, Rick's like very like suspect of him. He's like, what, do you get a bonus for every kid you bag?
Which has a very heavy sexual tone to it.
Definitely.
But I think it also just, it's a very earned distrust that he has at that point. He spent the last 27 minutes being wrecked.
But quick question.
Everyone...
If he did get a bonus for every extra kid he bagged, don't we think that would make him, like, a really good social worker? Like, he'd be invested emotionally and financially?
Well,
like,
the implication is that it's like cops with their ticket quotas. If you get more money for bagging more kids, then you're doing it to ones that don't need it, which is what he was
implying. I don't think there's, like, a shortage of kids that need it. You know what I mean, though? I don't feel like you can take a kid out of a good situation just to make a couple bucks. I think you can be like, look, your parents seem pretty tight, but daddy's got a gambling problem. So no, he doesn't. Well, I do. So now he does.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly dirty social workers.
I don't know if you can have a dirty social worker.
That's what he was implying. It doesn't mean if it's possible.
I'm just saying
it doesn't have to be possible.
I'm just saying this kid is 100% you because you're both thinking the same way and you're both dumb.
I understand what he's going through.
But the social worker is like...
Distrust everyone.
He gets super emotional and he does pull Rick in. Like, he mentions... that Rick doesn't seem like he's happy at all, ever.
Which is fair.
You look like a really sad fucking kid.
I mean, which is the only part that ties that let's make him smile into the rest of the story.
That's true. And then he says, is there someone else you can live with? And he's kind of hinting at Frank.
And he's like, oh yeah, why have I never just gone and lived with my brother this whole time? That guy that I think is the coolest.
But then the scene just kind of trails off. It doesn't actually finish.
Yeah.
You would expect that there would be a confrontation with the dad or something, right?
Well, the thing is that they have, like, it just trails off in a way that it's like...
No, remember, we established this. You're not allowed to watch people get beat up. It has to be done off camera. So it was implied that he got on his hog, rode over there, and just whipped the fuck out of Rick's dad.
I actually really like how they are, like, just implied, like... Yeah, we have about 4 hours of conversation to deal with right now, so we're just going to kind of pan backwards.
There's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of meetings. We have to talk to his brother, and that's another character, so we're not bringing him in
at
this point.
Cut to tomorrow.
There's like 3 episodes of show in between, this and the next scene over the weekend here, whatever it was. So it's just the next day, and Rick is waiting for Joey, and he's like, where's my money? Joey apologizes. Where's my money? He pays him, and Rick and him kind of like, he's like, okay, that's cool. Take good care of that jacket. And Rick explains that he's going to go live with his brother. Invites Joey to, you know, he can come over.
You can come hang out sometime.
He'll buy us beers.
Yeah, pretty much. He's got really good weed, whatever it might have been.
And he finally calls him buddy.
That's how it ends, right? Like, yeah. Well, pretty close, right? He's like, see you around. And Rick's like, yeah, takes his hat. Joey kind of turns around and goes, buddy, throws him his hat back, all cool.
And then the girls see him actually smile, and they realize that, oh, what he needed was an actual friend, not people fucking with him on the way to class. Yeah,
an actual friend and a dentist. What he needed was an actual friend and a dentist. Now that they've seen him smile.
That freeze frame. I wonder if he, like, if he watched that, if this actor Rick actually watched it now, would he just be like, God damn, why did I smile like that?
God damn, why did they cast such an ugly kid?
If this was today, would he have made that his Facebook profile picture?
Oh, yes, he would have.
Definitely.
Special thank to, boom, him.
So what do you guys think the lesson was in this episode?
Snitches get stitches.
Be sneakier about beating kids. Like, just don't do it in front of everybody.
Yeah. Only what you do with your kids in your private time should stay private. Whatever it is, loving them, beating them, abusing them, or just like taking them to the water park. You don't want to have to bring more kids to the water park. It's like family time, quality family time. Isn't that what this episode
is
about?
We've also seen that when you're doing groceries and you need to save money, go with no name everything, but the one thing you won't compromise on is Coca-Cola.
Definitely. In glass bottles.
You don't get some President's Choice off-brand nonsense. You get Coca-Cola. It doesn't matter if you have to eat a yellow box of Cheerios. You're getting fucking Coca-Cola.
Yeah, and like they had glass bottles, not even like a plastic bottle or a can. You buy in like dirt cheap fish sticks, like probably not even fish, but that Coca-Cola has to be in glass or this whole fucking thing is garbage.
The thing I think, now maybe it just wasn't available at the time, but if I was doing something and I was trying to simulate the situation of going over to your like a kid's house and then his family's poor and maybe abusive and it's rough over there, they don't have Coca-Cola, they have diet decaffeinated I don't know what it that's what they always had.
I can tell you from so much experience that, oh yeah, baby, they have Coca-Cola, but it doesn't come in a quantity less than 2 liters. That's they'll have 16 liters of Coca-Cola in like just sitting beside the fridge waiting. As soon as one finishes, you gotta pop the other one in. They got their Coca-Cola, but it's in bulk.
Just buying 8-packs of 2-liter bottles or something.
Yeah.
I feel like at the time that this was happening, like parental abuse, probably like it was happening, but it wasn't like there was still some acceptance of it. So I think they were kind of like coming from a very after school special way and helping kids see what they were doing.
What's really interesting to think about is now it might not have been a large percentage, but there's at least like a handful of adults out there that if you might meet one and you were talking to them and you'd be like, oh, what was your childhood like? And they're like, I was pretty rough. My parents were abusive. I mean, I got out of it, but, you know, it was pretty rough. And then you're like, oh, how did you get out of it? And they're like, well, I was watching this episode of Degrassi and it showed me that, like, I can do something about this. And there's like guaranteed like 5 people out there that's a story for.
I don't know if they would do you think that they would actually credit Degrassi with it, or do you think it just maybe seeps in and then they're like,
this was the impetus for like not a lot but a couple of people, the thing that pushed it.
I'd say 1 out of 5 realized that it was Degrassi.
1 out of 5 kids watched the show.
No, like, 1 out of 5 kids who Degrassi helped realize that it was
I think that
Degrassi.
this show like is one of the things that makes it so interesting is that like it definitely came out of a time where this is the first big generation of like single parents. Like this is like in the 70s it was not like it was all hippies and shit, but you still were supposed to be like family or whatever. Like the 80s was single parent generation, so it's all like all these things are just like all these parents are fucked. Like everyone's doing everything themselves and they don't know what they're supposed to do.
There is a bunch of divorced like parents for a lot of the characters on the show.
Yeah,
the thing that's interesting though is they do really burn through the problems most kids face, and then they go to some pretty B-side deep cut problems.
That's true.
Eventually, yeah. Oh, what, you did LSD and fell off a bridge and are now sort of retarded? Episode. That's not appealing to a lot of people. You know what I mean?
That's a weird side of teenage pregnancy. Where it's you're so unprepared to be a dad that you also made yourself mentally disabled.
Yeah, yeah. Classic. That's they're like, that's a deep cut problem.
That is the problem. Didn't they do way too many episodes a season too?
There's 86 episodes total over 5 years.
Over 5 years.
And I might be including the movies for 4 episodes or something.
That's not that bad then.
So, but it is 18 episode seasons kind of a thing. Yeah. And they're long. This was 29 minutes.
Yeah, that is true.
That's when they would play them on CBC at 4 o'clock or whenever during the day, they wouldn't be this long. There would be edits from them.
22.
Yeah, they'd be standard.
Commercials and stuff.
But when they were on the 80s, they'd be this long.
I think I have a zit. Weird. Oh, I parted my hair differently and now it's fixed. They realized that probably didn't need to make the final cut.
I mean, I feel like that was one of the most strongest points of this episode. So
you like Melanie's journey to part her hair the other way.
She's a problem solver. She had a problem 20 seconds later. Don't worry about it. I got this.
Well, this was a sweet episode, guys. I was glad to have you here for this super intense one. I think we did a good job of finding the light parts to it as well.
Yeah.
Troy, what's your Twitter?
Tron, at Tron Stark, T-R-O-N Stark.
And at Metal Comedy for me.
There we go. Pretty easy Twitter handles. Check these guys out. They're hilarious. And I'll see you next time on Back to Degrassi. Thanks, guys. Peace.
I am literally